ओम ज्ञान तिमिरंभस्य ज्ञानांजलिशलाकाय चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नमः ओम विष्णुपादाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी इति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्य वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। So I'm grateful to be here amongst all of you today. And I'll speak on the Bhagavad Gita 17:16 on the topic of what is happiness. Is happiness an emotion, a decision, or a benediction? So Bhagavad Gita 17:16 is austerity of the mind. Anudvega karam vakyam satyam priyahitam chayat Swadhyay abhyasanam chaiva vanmayam tapauchyate. Krishna says, first, speak in a way that doesn't agitate others. That is austerity of the speech. I'll come back to that little later. And then he says, austerity of the mind is manah prasada saumyatvam maunam atma vinigraha bhavasam shuddhirityetat tapo manasam uchyate. Says, the first principle he talks about in austerity of the mind is manah prasad. Manah prasad means cultivating satisfaction. It's austerity of the mind. And so normally we often think of happiness as something which we experience. So today I'm feeling happy. Today I'm not feeling happy. We all have our emotions, our moods, and they go up and down. But it's significant, Krishna says over here that happiness is austerity. Austerity means it's a decision that we make. Just like we make a decision to fast on Ekadashi or on some sacred days. So can happiness be a decision? So I'll talk about this in terms of a Venn diagram or quadrant approach. So I'll talk about happiness in terms of emotion and decision. So when we talk about happiness as an emotion, there are times when we feel happy. Just sometimes we wake up and we are in a good mood. Sometimes we wake up and we feel like when the alarm has rung, we feel like smashing the alarm and going to sleep again. So we have different moods. And these moods, sometimes we feel happy, sometimes we feel irritated, sometimes we feel dejected. And sometimes these moods, these emotions that we feel, we can tie them to some situations. Oh, this person spoke like this to me and I'm feeling so disheartened by that. I'm feeling so insulted, so hurt, they did like this. Or it can sometimes, such things happen in life in such a way that we feel hurt, we feel alienated, we feel betrayed. So then basically, that is, if we consider, as the Bhagavad Gita says, that our existence is three level, body, mind and soul. Body, mind. So then there could be a physical situation at the level of the body. There is an emotion at the level of the mind. And there is we as consciousness, we experience that emotion. So when we talk about happiness or distress as an emotion, that means it's rising in the mind. Now when something rises in the mind, it can be because of some external situation or it may not be connected with any external situation. Sometimes we wake up and we feel irritable and we ourselves can't rest. Why am I so irritable? I just feel annoyed. So sometimes we can tie the emotion to a situation, sometimes we can't tie the emotion to a situation. But in the either case, it's an emotion that just comes along. And at that time, it's clearly that happiness, or basically a state of mind, happiness or distress, it's an emotion. But it's not only that. Because the emotion is an advanced stage of thoughts. We think about something and gradually we start experiencing emotions in relationship with it. Now when we think about thoughts, see, at one level, Krishna himself talks about happy and unhappy things happening in life. For example, he talks about in 520 in the Bhagavad Gita that Dukkheshu anudvigna mana sukheshu vigata spruha. This is earlier in the Gita, 256. But the same mood is 520 also, that no dvijet, that one who is getting happiness, that person is not elated when they are happy, and they are not dejected when they are, not elated when good things happen to them, and they are not dejected when bad things happen to them. So, that Krishna is also saying that situations can affect our emotions. So basically, we consider happiness as an emotion. But it's not just an emotion. It's like, I said, emotions are an advanced stage of thoughts. And we use the word thought also in two different senses. Say, for example, we may say, I just got a thought. That is like something has popped up inside us. But then we also say, I have given this a lot of thought. When we say, I have given this a lot of thought, that means so we have paid attention to it. We have analyzed it. We have arrived at some understanding based on systematic contemplation. So just as thought can have these two ideas to it, that something just pops up within us and something which to which we apply our intelligence, apply our thinking process. So we could say that the same can apply to our state of consciousness, whether we are happy or unhappy. So sometimes as per our moods, we may feel irritable, we may feel unhappy, we may feel dejected, we may feel lonely. So definitely happiness or unhappiness, these are emotions. But that is not all they are. There is also an aspect of decision. To explain this aspect, let's consider that I said that it's like a body, mind and soul, they are like the three levels of reality. So we could say it's like the hardware, the software and the user. If we have a phone, on a phone, the phone may be giving some messages. Somebody sends a message or some notification comes up which is not connected with anything relevant to us, but some notification comes up. So the notification popping up is like a thought coming up in our mind. And then we look at it, we think about it and we respond to it. So sometimes somebody might send a notification which is very agitating to us, very distressing to us. And then look at it and we get agitated. But suppose we read that notification and that is the time when we have to do something very important for us. Then we say, okay, push this aside. I want to focus. Although this has happened, let me push this aside. Let me focus on what is important for me. So when that notification pops up, if we have important job interview or if we have important exam or if we have some important service, then what happens? We put it aside and we focus. I remember once about 2 years ago, it was early morning and I just completed my japa and I was going for the Bhagavatam class and I got a message from India. It was an infuriating message. It was somebody had said something, done something. I felt so wild about it. I just didn't know how to respond. But there was no time to respond also. And when that message came, I felt so angry about it. I felt like my world has come crashing down now. How dare somebody make some accusation like this or make some statement like this. So, but then I had to give that class. So I went for the class. And then I started speaking for the class. And then for that next one and a half hours after the class, the question answers, that same thought which I had felt was like a devastating thing I didn't even think about it. And then after that, after the class got over, then I was going back, I picked up my phone and then I remembered. And immediately like a storm hit me again. What's happening here? The situation is the same, but as they say, that idle mind is the devil's workshop. During our idle time, our mind works overtime. So, now there can be situations which are agitating, and in that sense, happiness or unhappiness can come as an emotion. But it's also a decision. When something has happened, how much attention do we give to it? How much do we focus on it? And sometimes the more we focus on it, the worse it becomes. So often we think of the situation and our state of consciousness as just a one-step process. That this is the situation and they said this and I'm angry. They said this and I'm depressed. They said this and I'm feeling hurt. Or did this and I'm feeling hurt. But the whole process of the philosophical analysis in the Bhagavad Gita is to help us understand that happiness is not a one-step process, it's a two-step process. So when Krishna says that, for example, dukkheshva anudvigna manaha, that when something distressing happens, those who are spiritually situated don't become distressed. Now what does this mean? It's not that Bhagavad Gita is saying we live in a artificially created some kind of bubble where we don't perceive things as distressing at all. Distressing things do happen. But Krishna is saying, you, if you are spiritually situated, you won't get distressed by it. So, how will that happen? That can happen if we don't focus on that particular thing. Distressful things happen and actually they will affect us. We may have to live with pain, but we don't have to live in pain. With pain is this problem is there, I need to deal with it. In pain is, we are completely consumed by it. We don't think of anything except that. So, that happens when we choose, just like the notification comes on the phone, we can't determine what notification will come on our phone. In many ways. Somebody sends a message, it just comes. But we can choose how much attention we give to that. So based on this background, I'll talk about four quadrants. Say, happiness, is it an emotion or is it a decision? So first quadrant will be, we neither have the emotion of happiness, nor do we make the decision to be happy. Then we have the emotion of happiness, but there is no decision that I will be happy, I'll be cheerful. There is the decision to be happy, but there is no emotion. And there is the emotion and the decision. So now Srila Prabhupada told us, one of his most well-known instructions is chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Now, is this one instruction or are there two instructions? Is it, we'll chant Hare Krishna and we'll become happy? Or is Prabhupada saying, this is chant Hare Krishna is instruction, be happy is also instruction? Now we can say, it is actually both. And this is illustrated in the Bhagavatam. In the whole Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada quotes most from the second chapter of the first canto, Divinity and Divine Service. And he's written the whole book, Dharma, the Way of Transcendence, that is based on 1.26 to 22. That is the section which Prabhupada quotes very often. And that section concludes with a very interesting verse which addresses this theme of happiness, is it an emotion or is it a decision? So that verse is, after we understand the process of devotional service and how it works, it says, Atavai kavayo nityam tim paramayamuda vasudeve bhagavati kurvanti atma prasadinim atavai kavayo nityam. Therefore, the wise people constantly perform bhakti. They practice bhakti toward Lord Vasudev. And here the two say this. This is, they practice this bhakti joyfully. They practice bhakti joyfully. Atavai kavayo nityam paramayamuda. With great joy, they practice the process of bhakti. And this process of bhakti, Vasudevi Bhakti, Kurvantya Atma Prasadhanam. And this process of bhakti gives us happiness. So it's like what it's saying is, they happily practice the process that gives happiness. Now, is happiness a component of the process, or is happiness a result of the process? So it's both according to this verse. Now how do we make sense of this? It's like suppose somebody is sick and they are seeking some treatment. Now when we are sick, obviously there is going to be pain. Especially the sickness is not just like a hidden sickness. There is some pain because of that. And we can't deny the pain. So sometimes there's a people who, when they fall sick, they become so irritable. They become so grumpy, they become rude, they become disagreeable. And then what happens is that they are sick and they make their caregivers sick of them. By just the way they conduct themselves. Now you cannot, when there is sickness and there is pain, you just can't deny it. Obviously there is pain in the body. But just because there is pain in the body, that doesn't necessarily mean that that justifies their being crappy or irritable or rude or disagreeable. So, and if somebody even in sickness, they maintain their composure, they stay calm, they stay positive, then we appreciate that. It's inspiring to see somebody staying calm and sturdy even amidst distress, amidst sickness and pain. So, this is somebody in sickness, obviously they have pain. That's pain as an emotion. But as a decision, they can focus either on how much they are suffering because of the disease, or they can focus, okay, at least I am being treated. There are caregivers who are taking care of me. I am on the path to recovery. And they can focus on that and they can make a decision to be positive. So, the state of mind when somebody is sick is not just emotion, or the state of consciousness of a person, it's not just an emotion, it's also a decision. So to the extent we are attached to the mind and the body, to that extent our state of consciousness becomes almost locked to the situation and whatever comes in the mind because of that. But if we are practicing bhakti seriously, then we rise above the situations and above the emotions. And then you can choose, what do we dwell on? What do we focus on? So the idea here is that our practice of bhakti is meant to help. So when it is said, the wise people joyfully practice the process of bhakti which gives joy. That is understood as, it's like a sick person who has now got a treatment that works. And they are still in pain, but they are joyful that I have got a treatment that works. And they take the treatment joyfully. And they know that once I become healthy, then there will be joy. So the joyful in this is a component. And it's a component because they are grateful that I have got this method to treat myself, to heal myself. So similarly for us, when Prabhupada says, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, what it means is that it's sometimes we may chant and may feel happy. Sometimes we may chant and we may not feel happy. Like sometimes we chant and we feel so connected with Krishna. We feel the sound vibration so powerful. We feel as if chanting should never end. We just want to chant more rounds, more rounds, more rounds. But on most days, we chant and then we feel chanting never ends. We feel as if sometimes we take our beads out of the bead bag. Has somebody replaced 108 beads with 1008 beads? This is just not getting over. So what happens? Sometimes when we chant, we may not feel happy. So if we are in that situation when we don't have the emotion of the first quadrant, there's no emotion of happiness and there's no decision of happiness, then we are miserable and we make others miserable. If we are in the second quadrant where things may be good around us, so we sometimes feel the emotion of happiness, but if we have not made that decision, Then the emotion goes away and again we sink into the first quadrant. We sink into the first quadrant back. So then such people are very moody. And we live in an interconnected world. And if we know, if we are in a relationship with someone who is moody, then what happens? When they become depressed, everybody around them, even if the others don't become depressed, everybody becomes tense. You know, this person, everybody has to like walk on with tender feet around them. And it creates tension. So, in many ways, happiness, we need to see that not just as an emotion that we feel, but also as a decision that we make. Happiness is to be happy, to be cheerful, is a responsibility. We don't want to be like radiators of misery. And this is one of the most amazing things about Srila Prabhupada. If we look at Srila Prabhupada's life from an objective perspective, so many things went wrong in his life. He tried to start a business and repeatedly tried it. And some people cheated him, there was a fire. And somehow he tried first in Calcutta, then tried in Mumbai, then he tried in Allahabad. And these were all, when we read Prabhupada Lilamrit, we just skip over this because we want to focus on the spiritual side of Srila Prabhupada. But these were big things. As one devotee friend of mine, he's writing a book of about Srila Prabhupada before, as a grihastha, how he lived. And he says that, you know, as he's interacting with many people, it's somebody puts their heart and life into starting an establishment and just crumbles. It can be devastating. But Prabhupada continued. And then he tried to start an organization, the League of Devotees. And it just, the same people who were supporting him, they worked against him. Then he tried to work with his god brothers, and then he had great vision and he was taking the responsibility to execute that vision, but they were repeatedly bringing obstacles for him. Then he tried to go to America, and then, you know, nobody was responding. People were not even taking it seriously. Because he's not even a known Swami in India. What will you do in America? So, but when Srila Prabhupada eventually came to America, even then, his typewriter was stolen, his dictaphone was stolen. David, the person who was supposed to become his first disciple, turned and attacked him. And through all this that happened, Prabhupada never became pessimistic or bitter. Normally, people have, when they're small, they have big ambition. You ask a child, what do you want to do? I want to become this, I want to become that. Maybe say, child is, I want to become the president of America. I want to become the wealthiest person in my country or whatever. And then they grow up and they start realizing that, hey, this life is tough. Fulfilling dreams is not easy. And that same person who said, I want to become the wealthiest person in the country, by the time maybe they come to college and they're graduating, they say, if I get a job, it'll be good. So what happens? As we go through life, life beats us down. And it's easy to become disheartened. Now, if we look from a perspective, very few people faced as many reversals as Srila Prabhupada faced. And Prabhupada never lost his heart, never lost lost his devotional ambition to do big things for Krishna. And even when practically nothing was happening, Prabhupada was happy, Prabhupada was cheerful. And that's what many of the devotees who met Srila Prabhupada in the earlier days, when he was a completely unknown Swami, they saw that Swami was happy. He was just so happy speaking about Krishna and writing about Krishna when nobody was there to speak, nobody was there for him to speak about Krishna. So, Prabhupada exhibited this, that one characteristic of Sattvaguna is happiness. And its happiness is also a conscious choice. It's not just a choice, you could say it's a responsibility. Just because we are feeling miserable, that doesn't give us the right to make others miserable. Just because we are feeling miserable, that doesn't give us the right to make others miserable. So that, if we do, that is actually functioning in the mode of ignorance. So here now I am coming to the third quadrant. So, when I gave the example of Prabhupada, the point I was making is that the situations were quite disheartening for Srila Prabhupada. But Prabhupada's consciousness was not just determined by the situations. So now when we say we make happiness as a decision, even when the emotion of happiness is not there, is that being artificial? Is that being a fake? Not exactly. See, when we are feeling hurt, when we are feeling distressed, if we are emotionally wounded, we need someone to whom we can speak our heart. So, but after we have spoken, after we have vented out that burden on our heart, then we need to let go of it. We need to move on. Emotional wounds need to be treated like physical wounds. If I have a serious, small physical wound, okay, just leave it, it will heal on its own. It's a big, major physical wound, I need some treatment. I need to go to a physician, I need to get it treated. And then maybe I need to restrict my activity for some time if the hand cannot be exercised. But after that, I cannot constantly be thinking, oh, you know, why did this hand get injured? Why did this hand get injured? Okay, it got injured, now move on. So same way with emotional wounds, when they happen to us, we can't just completely fake it and deny it. We act as if we are happy even when we are miserable. We need someone with whom we can open our heart and speak. That's why Guhyam Akhyati Pruchyati is a limbo bhakti. When we share our heart and we get some solace, some strength, some perspective. But after we have got that, we can't keep obsessing on it. We need to move on. And that's why this third quadrant, sadhana bhakti, most of the time we are situated in third quadrant, where happiness may not be there as an emotion, but happiness has to be there as a decision. So now, is this artificial? Well, not necessarily. It is also an austerity. And that austerity is simply a part of culture. Now, we cannot see the thoughts of each other. And that is a great blessing. If we started seeing each other's thoughts, desires, emotions, not a single relationship could be sustained. You think like this about me? You have this kind of desires? You feel this way? Horrible! So, nature itself has given us a buffer. Nature has given us that buffer where the emotions that come, it's not that emotions immediately translate into actions. And in many ways, culture means that we don't simply act according to our emotions. We may be very angry with someone, but we say culture means that we may not yell. Even if, say, if we are very angry with someone, still we will not vent out our anger in public. And we will maybe take a private, we will go to a private place and privately talk with them. One of my grandfathers, he would tell me that, he would tell my parents, and he says that, sometimes naturally my parents would get sometimes angry with each other. So, they would quarrel. So, whenever they would have some quarrel, they would just, either they would go out of the house, or they would tell me to go out of the house, or they will go to a room and lock the room. And then they would talk it out. Said that, whatever are our differences, there are differences. We will not speak them in front of our children. So, that is in some ways, it's not that they are hiding it, but there is no need to make others miserable because we are miserable. So, culture means that we don't just simply act based on our emotions. So, there is, sometimes people have this idea that when practicing bhakti is all about emotions. Oh, I feel bhakti, I feel joy. That's good if we feel that joy. But there are two aspects to bhakti. Sometimes we feel our way to actions. And sometimes we act our way to feelings. We feel our way to actions means we feel so devotional, so spiritual. We want to come to the temple. We want to have darshan. We want to dance. We want to offer the lamp. And sometimes we just don't feel like that at all. But we act our way to feelings. That means just come here, come in the association of devotees, talk with them, get out of the head. And slowly, once we do the actions, the feelings start coming. And sadhana bhakti is often this, that it's acting our way to actions. Acting our way to emotions. We act till the emotions come up. So for each one of us, when we are practicing bhakti, there are so many things that can go wrong in life. In fact, you could say we human beings have multiple needs. So we could say that we have 6 basic needs: air, water, food, clothing, shelter, and someone to blame. It's almost like a human need. Because of you this is happening, because of you this is happening. And when that happens, basically we make ourselves miserable. So actually growing up emotionally, growing up spiritually means the world influences us, but we also influence ourselves. And we influence ourselves means we make our decision. We make our decision to be cheerful while we are going through our life. And the way to be cheerful is to look for the positives, not look at the negatives. We count our blessings, not our problems. And then when we keep doing this, gradually we'll rise to the fourth quadrant. The fourth quadrant is where happiness is an emotion and happiness also as a decision. And how does that happen? That happens as a benediction. The benediction means, see, right now our emotions are largely products of the moods. So when we are in the mode of goodness, we may feel positive and cheerful. When we are in the mode of ignorance, we just feel the whole world is a terrible place. We are terrible. People are terrible. There was an atheistic philosopher who was asked, "Do you believe in hell?" And he said, "Of course." People are surprised. If he is an atheist, how does he believe in hell? He says, "What is your definition of hell?" So he said, "Hell means other people." That was his idea, that people are such a source of misery. Hell means other people. So now, in the mode of ignorance, we just keep blaming others. So presently our emotions arise because of the modes. And Krishna says that Mam chayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. That practice bhakti unwaveringly and then you will transcend the modes. Now we may say that it is because of the modes that I can't practice bhakti unwaveringly. So because I feel in the passion, I feel in ignorance, I just don't feel like practicing bhakti. So then how can I practice unwaveringly bhakti and then transcend the modes? So I'll conclude with this point, that this, I said, how do we rise to this fourth quadrant of devotion as a benedict of emotion, happiness as an emotion and happiness as a decision. So we can be in the fourth quadrant when we get the benediction of Krishna. The benediction of Krishna comes when we transcend the modes. When we rise to the spiritual level, our consciousness naturally stays connected with Krishna, and then there is natural joyfulness because of that. But till we get there, so is happiness a benediction? Yes, it is. When we are purified, when Krishna reveals himself from within our hearts, and in that revelation we just become naturally joyful because we are attracted to Krishna, we are naturally remembering Krishna, and Krishna is the source of all happiness. But till we get there, what do we do? It is, we want to be in that fourth quadrant or at least the third quadrant, where even if I am not feeling happiness as an emotion, happiness is a decision. So to do that, we need an anchor. We need something that we can hold on to when we are going through our life. So Rupa Goswami calls this Uddipan. Uddipan is spiritual stimulus. He talks about this in the Ujjwal Neelamani. So the idea is, if we consider, there are 2 circles. One circle is the circle of things we like. And the second circle is the circle of things that are good for us. Now if those 2 circles were identical, life would be so joyful. But there are many things which we like, they're not good for us. There are many things which are good for us, we don't like. But these circles are not entirely non-intersecting. They do intersect somewhere. So what is it that we like to do and that is also good for us? So some of us may like kirtan. We hear some kirtan, not just kirtan, but maybe a particular tune, a particular devotee's kirtan, or a particular way it is played, a particular song. Some of us may like to read Shastra, maybe a particular book or a particular devotee's classes, Or we may like to do a particular form of devotional service. We like to dress the deities, cook, so whatever. So what happens if we find out that what is it that we like to do and which is also good for us? Then we can hold on to that. And if we hold on to that, then even when happiness as an emotion is not coming, we can still not get carried away by that unhappiness or distress, but we can stay steady. So when Krishna is saying, Mam cha yo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate, how can we practice bhakti unflinchingly while we are under the influence of the modes? By finding out some limb of bhakti to which we can hold on firmly. And to the extent we start doing that, to that extent, we will start, our decision to hold on to that is like the decision to be happy. Yes, there are many things wrong in my life, but this is something which I will hold on to. And once we hold on to that, that connection with Krishna will gradually broaden and the emotion of happiness will come up. So to the extent we take up that being cheerful, being positive, being happy as a responsibility. That this is what is how I want to serve Krishna. That we all, one of Prabhupada's instructions was that we all share Krishna consciousness with others. Now, all of us may not be able to preach and give classes. But more than the classes that we give, the best preacher is simply a happy devotee. There is no one who can preach as effectively as just a devotee who is cheerful, a devotee who is happy. Everybody is looking for joy, and not just superficial joy, but something joy which is meaningful, which is purposeful. So each of us can not only make our life cheerful, but we can also help others to become cheerful if we make this happiness as a decision, as a responsibility. And if we do this as a service to Krishna, then we'll find that even when there are difficult situations, if we make it as a responsibility, then the pain, the distress, the pain, the painful situation will be there, but the painful emotion won't be that dominant. And as I said, we may have to live with pain, but we won't have to live in pain. That is what Krishna is saying, that even when distressful situations come, we don't feel distress. Na praharishet priyam prapya, no dvijet prapya cha priyam, sthira buddhir asammudho, brahmavid brahmani sthitaha. Na praharishet priyam prapya, no dvijet prapya cha priyam. So Krishna is saying, apriya, that is unfavorable, situation is unfavorable, but one doesn't become distressed by that. Because brahmavit brahmani sthita, one is spiritually situated. So if we anchor ourselves in our connection with, if we hold on to the anchor of connection with Krishna, then disturbances won't disturb us. And we can steadily move forward on the path of bhakti. So Krishna doesn't promise a stormless sea, but Krishna does provide an unsinkable ship. That unsinkable ship is the absorption in Him. It is Krishna consciousness. And today, one aspect of Krishna consciousness is practicing the limbs of bhakti that make us conscious of Krishna. But another important aspect of Krishna consciousness is also choosing happiness as a decision. Because when you choose happiness as a responsibility, as a decision, we become more open and receptive to the Krishna conscious stimuli. The negative emotions, they block us, and then we can't even become receptive to Krishna. So when we choose happiness as a responsibility, then we will connect with Krishna better, and that connection with Krishna will also bring about gradually happiness as an emotion. So I'll conclude with a summary. I spoke today on the topic of what is happiness? Is it an emotion, decision, or a benediction? I talk about how it is all three. I started by explaining that often we think of our emotions, happiness or distress, as simply as emotion. I'm feeling happy, I'm not feeling happy. That's when we have our moods. And it's true. And sometimes we can talk, we can link our emotions to particular situations. But, so we are, there's the body, mind and soul. And our state of consciousness is, it is affected by situations, it is affected by the physical level, it is affected by the emotions at the mental level, but our state of consciousness is different from all of these. Just like on a phone, a notification comes, But we determine how much notice we take of it, how much attention we give to it. So thought may pop up within us, but we decide how much thought we give to that thought. So when something troubling comes up within us, something troubling happens, we can choose how much attention we give to that. So is happiness an emotion? Yes, it is. Is distress also an emotion? It is. But it is not only that. Krishna says we try to cultivate satisfaction as austerity. And I talked about this four-level diagram. If we have no happiness as an emotion and we don't have happiness as a decision, then we are miserable and we make others miserable. And we are simply radiators of misery. And people will start avoiding us. And that will make us even more miserable. But if we have happiness as an emotion, but we have not made happiness as a decision, then when the good things are happening in our life, we'll feel good. Or when we are in a good mood, we are good. But then again, afterward, we'll sink back to the first quadrant where we'll be miserable and we'll making others miserable. Then third quadrant is where we need to situate ourselves, that happiness as a decision, even if the emotion is not there. And that is based on appreciating our situation philosophically. We are sick in the material existence, but we are fortunate that we have the healing process of Krishna consciousness. So the bhakti is a process of joy, process that delivers joy, but it is also a process to be performed with joy. That is, we look not at our problems, but look at our blessings, and we cultivate happiness as an emotion. And then we rise to the fourth quadrant when we become purified and we get the benediction of Krishna in the form of His revelation in our heart, a revelation of His attractiveness. Then we are absorbed in Krishna and then we are naturally happy. But how do we stay in the third and rise to the fourth? That is by finding our anchor in bhakti. Our anchor is where the intersection of what is good for us and what we like. If we can hold on to that, that is how we can apply 1426, that mam chayo vipicharena. We practice bhakti unflinchingly and then gradually we transcend the modes. So while we are in the third quadrant, we may have to live with pain, but we don't have to live in pain. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any time for questions? Any questions? Yes, please. Yeah.
The question is, there's genuine immersion and there's mental or intellectual immersion. A reaction to sensual stimulation. The reaction could be recognition of one's spiritual identity, and then happiness is there. Hmm. Or it could just be feels good, and happiness is there. Hmm. But our emotion, the question beyond that is it thinking, feeling, and willing that the immersion is characterized in? Are we dealing with the spiritual purified mind, or are we dealing with the conditional mind when we're talking about the subject of happiness?
Okay. So when we're talking about the subject of happiness, are we talking about the mind, the pure emotions from the soul, or are we talking about the conditioned emotions that arise from the body and mind? Well, it's actually at our stage very difficult to find that out. When an emotion comes up, how do I really know where it is coming from? And even if it is from wherever it is coming on, it is there right now. And I have to deal with it. Sometimes we can maybe intellectually analyze, and this is just the bodily conception of life because of which I am feeling like this. And that might help to distance ourselves from it. But ultimately, more important than where an emotion is coming from is where an emotion is taking us. Because when a particular idea, a particular thought, particular emotion rises, it's very difficult. Is this coming from the soul? Is this coming from Krishna, the super soul? Is this coming from just my conditioned mind? It's very, very difficult. When this stimuli pop up within us, these thoughts, emotions, they don't come with a label. I am coming from the soul. I am coming from the body. So, but what we can see is, where are they taking us? And that's why the first two limbs of surrender are very proactive. Anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjana. Accept that which is favorable and avoid that which is unfavorable. And how do we decide what is favorable and unfavorable? It is based on where it is taking us. So, where it is taking us. Where it is taking us. So, if, say, we someday wake up and feel, oh, I just want to change my rounds. I want to go to the temple. I want to do this. Now, is that really coming from the soul or Krishna? Maybe. That might also come from our mind some days. But, if it's taking us toward Krishna, wonderful. But if we wake up and feel, oh, I want to just go and do this and do that, and all non-devotional or anti-devotional things that we feel like doing, well, this is taking me away from Krishna, I'll not do it. That's why it's important to have some kind of culture and structure in our life. Structure means there is some pattern. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I do in the morning. This I do in the afternoon. This I do. Not like necessarily completely rigid, but some amount of structure. Then that creates some boundaries. Every relationship has bond and every relationship has boundaries. So the bond with Krishna, that is not really in our control. It means sometimes we feel that bond, sometimes we don't feel that bond. So when we take initiation, we have these two sets. One is we take the initiation vow to practice the process of bhakti, to chant. That is the bond. And then the regulative principles are like the boundary. So the same principle we apply, that okay, that whenever emotions come up, I will not go beyond certain boundaries. And these are the activities that bond me with Krishna, and I'll try to do them. So where is an emotion coming from? Maybe later we can analyze. Because sometimes we observe ourselves, in this particular situation, this is how I feel. Okay, then this emotion is the situation like this. Or sometimes some people bring out the best within us, and some people just bring out the worst within us. As soon as we come in front of them, or they come in front of us, we start feeling angry. We start feeling almost like yelling or whatever. Now, we can't blame them, but still we have to be aware. Okay, this is what happens. This person triggers me. So I have to be more careful. So it's more that we need to have a more functional approach towards emotions. Because it's very difficult to trace their origins. So functionally, if they are taking us toward Krishna, we accept them. If they take us away from Krishna, we try to distance ourselves from them. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Yes, please. Hare Krishna. So I have two questions. One of them was with the anchor. And then the other one was, just really quick, just to summarize, the first two quadrants, I got the three and the four, and then the second one is when you don't make the decision, but there is emotion,
yeah.
Right? So that's very unwavering.
Wavering, yeah. Sometimes you just feel good.
Okay, but and then the first one is that you don't have the emotion nor the decision,
yeah.
And you can bring down people around you.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just wanted to grasp that. Now, for the one of the anchor of, you know, what's good for you and what you like, and you're saying finding what intersects, right, and holding on to that as an anchor. It's interesting because sometimes I'll find myself around people who want to justify just continuously just doing that, what they like and what is good for them and what they like. Because why do something else that you don't like? And then, like, what is the proportion or the ratio in those things? And how often do we just hold on to them? And because...
Okay, that's right. A good question. So, if somebody just keeps doing what they like and don't do anything more, well, Krishna talks about multiple levels at which bhakti can be practiced in 12, 8 to 12. So, just... spontaneously be absorbed in me. Otherwise, be conscientiously absorbed in me. That's practice sadhana bhakti. If you can't do that, then it's work for me. If you can't work for me, then work and give the fruits of your work for some good cause. Krishna gives multiple levels. So we could say that if somebody wants to stay only in that zone of what is good for me and what I like to do, then they are practicing bhakti, but they may not be very serious devotees. So we accept them at that level also. But they may not rise that fast. Like Srila Prabhupada, we could say when he was there were almost like two models of outreach. One was in America, where those who became devotees, they just moved into the temple. Just gave up everything. And Krishna became the center of their life. Krishna became their whole life. But when Prabhupada went to India, there was a dramatically increased appreciation for Srila Prabhupada. Because he had made Western people into devotees. But just as before Prabhupada went from India to America, Indians at that time were not eager to become committed devotees. The same happened after Prabhupada went back to India also. You see, most people became life members who appreciated Srila Prabhupada. And they contributed to the building of temples. Some of them were already very influential people. So in their case, they had maybe some pious cultural respect for sadhus. They had a patriotic appreciation for the dharmic culture of India. And because of that, they were supporting Prabhupada. But they never became committed followers. And Prabhupada accepted them. Prabhupada even respected them. In almost every Indian, especially that person has been reasonably pious for most of their life, then they will have some guru of their own. And many of them had gurus who were Advaita impersonalists. Now Prabhupada never, unless the issue itself came up or they asked it, then Prabhupada didn't talk about that issue at all. Yes, they had their guru, but they also respected Prabhupada, they contributed to Prabhupada. There are many life members, Prabhupada, in their house, there are big pictures of their gurus. And Prabhupada would go to their houses and Prabhupada would talk with them and Prabhupada would encourage them to practice bhakti and they will serve. So that means that in bhakti, there are two aspects that we encourage people to rise from where they are up. But if they are not ready to rise, we also accept them where they are. So there are these two aspects of accepting and expecting. So if we expect too much and don't accept, we say I'm pushing people so that they rise, but we push and people go away. So sometimes some people, if that's the level they want to stay, well, at least accept them at that level. Nobody should feel unwanted or guilt or made to feel guilty because they're not rising up. But we shouldn't think that this is the normal level, this is standard level. If you see that, so the two levels of outreach were there. People moving into the temple and people just appreciating Srila Prabhupada's well-wishers. Now most of our movement today is somewhere in between these two. That is, we have congregation devotees. Very few people live in the temple. People have their jobs, their families. But they are also committed devotees. So they cannot be as committed as somebody who is living in the temple. But they are not as uncommitted as the life members are. So then we have to negotiate. Now, at what level of seriousness can somebody who is at that intermediate level practice bhakti? So, we naturally, in every relationship, there is some expecting. We want people to do certain things. But if the expecting is not working, it's alienating people, then accepting is also required. So, if somebody stays at that level, it should be clear from the overall classes and everything that there are higher levels of bhakti, and those higher levels of bhakti will lead to greater advancement. But it should be at a one-to-one level. It's not that we make them feel guilty about it. If that's what is they want to stay, we accept them at that level. Otherwise, they will go away. Does it answer your question? Any other concluding comments or questions? So thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki. Gaur Premanande, Hari Prabhu.